Welcome to Uncle Nene's Nerdcast. I'm your host, Nathan Fletcher, a.k.a. Uncle Nene, and I have a great show for you today. We're really excited. It's going to be a nice little filmmaker episode. So we have an independent filmmaker who's got a career over 15 years, work spans in multiple genres, action, drama, thrillers, even comedy. He wrote, directed, produced the mythological action drama Fighting Olympus, which is really interesting, brings ancient Greek gods into a gritty modern setting. He also is the creator of Black Box, an award-winning sci-fi short film. And in fact, he just wears many hats, filmmaker, author, songwriter. So it's going to be a lot of fun to have a conversation with him. Welcome to the show, Julian Hampton.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Great way to start the morning.
That's great. So, Julian, first, you know, you have such an interesting long career. What sparked your love of filmmaking, and how did you decide to pursue it outside the traditional Hollywood ecosystem?
Well, I've always been interested in storytelling. So even as a young child, I would put things together. Sometimes I like to have conversations with my mother because she'll pull out something that I made as a child. And look, see, you did this. See, I knew you were going to do this. And just telling stories, coming up with ideas and making little cartoons, playing with action figures and all of these things kind of got my drive going for storytelling. So I moved from creating pictures and little flip books where I could, you know, watch the images move and tell a story to songwriting, which songwriting is really just storytelling to music. So coming up with some ways to tell not necessarily my story from my point of view, but putting myself in others' point of views and what would happen if. And really, that's the cool part about storytelling. You can be whoever you want, whenever you want, wherever you want, and tell a story from different perspectives without living that exact life. So from creating songs to then I moved to writing books. So I authored 4 books telling stories. But one thing that came out of that was someone mentioned, or people that read the book were like, this sounds more like a movie. This doesn't sound, you know, novel-y. It sounds movie-ish. And from there, I moved into filmmaking and writing screenplays, and then said, you know what? Why not go the whole nine? Let's just make it, right? Instead of waiting for somebody to come in with the golden ticket, let's just make it. And that's where my journey started.
That's great. Yeah. It's I attempted to write a short story and quickly realized that I am not a writer of novels. I am a screenplay writer. I don't have that thing that people have that can write a novel as well as a screenplay. A screenplay I can comprehend, and I'm able to do better. But very different skill set. I have a good friend who writes novels, like, and he has the prose and the ability to do that. And it's not me. You know, I can't spend a page writing about the blades of grass.
It takes a lot of discipline in screenwriting, right? Because like you said, you could spend time, the tree fluttered in the wind and the sun hit it, and it's like, okay, that's like 3 pages I could go on with that, right?
Yeah.
Now, yeah. how do I convey that in one sentence?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a different discipline.
You know, you mentioned the novels, poetry, songwriting. Mm-hmm. Do you approach a film's pacing or imagery with a songwriter's sense of rhythm? And, you know, I believe that's been always something that for me, that like a TV show or a movie, a good one has this rhythm that you begin to almost anticipate what's happening. And it's almost on a subconscious level, but you anticipate oh, this person's about to die even before it happens. And you don't know why exactly you feel like something bad's going to happen, but you know something bad's going to happen. And so, you know, I'm curious, is that something that you've experienced?
Absolutely. So when you think of music, right, you get that buildup, that slow buildup. You're like, uh-oh, the good part's about to happen, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing with the movie, the pacing, right? You have that, if it's a horror, you have that uneasy feeling, right? If someone's stepping in the room and it's too quiet, okay, something's going on. There's a little, you know, the music changes a little bit, right?
Yeah.
The tone changes. When the person, you may not know they're the bad guy, but something just doesn't feel right.
Right.
You know,
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Something's there. So when it comes to pacing, it is like a song. It is like a storytelling, right? You're starting off, you're building the world, and then you're taking that world building and you're moving into, now I want to introduce the people that are in that world, just like a song, right? I want to introduce you to what this is all about. Then where does the conflict come in? Because, you know, other than that song, Be Happy, and the other one, Don't Worry, Be Happy, most songs have something, you know, something where it's a challenge. And now, how do you overcome that? Or it's not always about happy, you know, the happy ever after. Sometimes it's about, okay, this led to that. And music's the same way. It's not always, you know, at the end of the day, you know, guy marries girl and they ride off. Sometimes, you know, girl does something else. guy, you know, doesn't win. Girl doesn't win. Right. So it's all about finding that story that makes sense in the end and builds people up and anticipates. And sometimes false anticipation, red herrings, and, you know, you throw all of that in and you have a story that makes people say, whoa, I thought I knew what was happening, but this is a little different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, your debut feature film, Church in State, was a faith-based drama, which is quite different from the action fantasy vibe of Fighting Olympus.
Yes.
What did working on Church in State teach you about filmmaking?
It taught me that anything really is possible, because at that point, the crew, tiny crew, I didn't really know what the heck I was doing, right? I had a skill set and a vision. And in that movie, there's some really beautiful music that goes with it. As you talk about music, there's some music that kind of led to it. So I remember waking up in the middle of the night and just hearing this melody, and I couldn't stop, right? And I know from past experiences, if I don't get it recorded, I'm going to lose it. It's not going to sound the same, right?
Absolutely.
So part of that was starting out hearing those melodies, putting the song down, and every once in a while, I accidentally stumble upon the recording of me 3 in the morning. You know, see? It's like, woo! I don't know how this worked out, but, you know. So that part, that was part of it. The other part of it was the what if that comes into storytelling. What if a God-fearing woman that was on her basically on her deathbed met up with atheist cancer person with cancer, and they had to somehow find a way to coexist and find joy in their lives.
Right.
And it's not about one person changing the other or it's because that's not reality. Reality is sometimes you just find out how to understand one another and appreciate the humanity of one another. So
Beautiful.
That film really taught me how to bring a team of people I'd never met before together, how to actually make a film, how to do it in a way that was really interesting, right? Like we have this, there's a scene where there's a horse and carriage ride. People don't understand that it was in probably negative 15 degree weather. And we're in winter coats running aside a horse and carriage with a camera. And it's like the funniest behind the scenes thing. But then when you watch the movie, you see this beautiful scene and this snow's falling and everything.
Hey, you got the real fog though, right? When they're talking, you get the real fog coming out of their mouth.
well, the cool thing is when you play it to your advantage. So when the main actress, she was freezing. She was freezing. So I'm like, okay, just kind of hug up against her, right? Cover her with the blanket. Right. Let's make it into a comforting thing rather than, you know, okay, I don't know. At that time, again, I didn't know what I know now, but in post, can we change the color of her nose because it's bright red, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was something that really inspired my confidence to that I can do this. And when we watched it in a theater for the first time and I got all of these people behind me and I'm sitting in the front row, I'm just like sweating bullets, like, oh, please don't hate this. And when people were excited and enjoying it, I'm like, okay.
That's great. That's okay. Great. Yeah.
There's something here. Yeah, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that kind of moved things forward to make me feel like, you know, I can do whatever.
That's great. Since then, you have incorporated various science fiction and fantasy elements into some of your projects. Yep. And so I'm curious, why do sci-fi and fantasy themes keep appearing in your films? What draws you to them?
I've always been kind of infatuated with that element of films and stories in general. I think it takes me back like grade school. We used to watch, for some reason, I don't know why this was happening in grade school, but we used to have movie time. And one time we watched this old Lord of the Rings cartoon.
Okay.
It was weird. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
It was weird, but it was something about it that I was like, wow, this is interesting, right?
Yeah.
And I started reading the books.
Okay. So the cartoon led you to the books. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Cartoon led me to the books. And I read through that. And, you know, of course, those are some long books. But I read through and I was like, wow, this is, I can feel myself in that world. It's like, where is this place that I can vision it, right?
Yeah.
I could paint a picture of what it would look like and there. And so that catapulted my start of enjoying that genre, the you know, and then, you know, once Star Wars came along, that took me on another page because I'm like, whoa, this is cool. Like, who are these people? So you had two different pathways that I was embracing. And watching some of these films, I really got an appreciation for what do these ancient stories look like in film, right? Because now I'm transitioning from book to visual. And instead of me coming up with what I think that it should look like, someone's painting a picture for me. And I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, and my dad used to take me to this big old theater and they used to show these old Sinbad movies.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had that and I'm like, wow, this is so cool. Now, you know, watch them now. And I'm like,
right.
I don't know.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because you have these kind of philosophical questions with aliens, monsters, magic, that those kinds of movies explore. There's the escapism. You know, as a storyteller, I'm always fascinated by the way it can be a metaphor for life, right? Or a metaphor for different things. Do you have, you know, kind of What jumps out at you as far as like sci-fi and fantasy and the freedom that it gives you to comment on reality in a unique way compared to straight drama? You have, it's a more subtle way to have commentary on certain topics. And I'm curious, you know, what that means to you.
Absolutely. So it means that there's no boundaries.
Right.
There's no boundaries. There's no limitations. You can create, it's your world you're creating. You can create whatever the heck you want. And that was what was so liberating about Fighting Olympus, because, you know, like when I'm looking, when my wife and I are looking at wardrobe, it's like, wow, that's weird. Grab it.
Yeah. The Greek mythological characters and a modern crime. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. So you don't have any limits that say this is what that needs to look like, right?
Right.
Okay. So take Star Wars, for instance. You say, you know, there's going to be these people, you know, they're in white plastic with giant head.
Yeah.
They have guns. And someone would be like, what's wrong with you?
Right. Right.
That doesn't make sense.
Yes.
And now you say Stormtrooper, you're like, Alice. Yeah.
Yep. Of course. Right? Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So what we get to do in film is we get to make abnormal normal. We get to bring commentary in a different way. So, for example, there's a scene in Fighting Olympus, and it speaks to inequality, because there's an inequality between these different people in the cult and the different masks they wear. And gold symbolizes one level, silver is another level, bronze is another level. And sometimes the bronze can't go where the gold goes.
Right. So right. Yeah.
I'm able to bring in that commentary so subtle that you're not even really thinking about it. But then you're saying, you know what? That's not right.
Yeah. A little commentary on class warfare. And absolutely.
Yeah. So, and also the commentary, because the theme of that movie is how far are you willing to go, right? How far are you willing to go to save your family, to protect your loved ones, to, you know, would you go to the depths of Hades to save your family, right? So there's that common theme that all of us, you know, you talk about a mother that lifts a car up to protect her child, right? All of us have this superpower that's in us that comes when we're trying to protect those we love.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have Blacked Box, which is it's a short thriller about a high-tech mysterious box and a gamer racing against time. It makes me want to ask, how do you balance the extraordinary with the everyday in your stories?
The easy part about that is you put real people in extraordinary situations.
Right.
And see what happens. So the thing I always ask myself, and there's humor to that too, but there's also reality. So the thing I ask myself is, what would I do?
Yeah.
Right. What would I do in that situation? So there's a scene in that film where the guy brings the box home and his wife is like, what is that? Why are you bringing that here? Didn't I tell you to stop shopping on that website? And he's like, it has all these channels, some for you too, right?
So
that's what someone would really do. They try to justify what they weren't supposed to do by saying, I got you something too, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a real situation, but the ultimate part of the story makes it extraordinary, right? Because I know some people can tell quaint little stories that, you know, there's a fisherman and he fishes all day and, you know, at the end of the day he dies, right? Well, okay. Yeah. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
That's just not my thing.
Right.
So, you know, What would the fishermen do if aliens came out of the sky? Right.
Yeah.
Would he keep fishing? You know, how would he react? You know, if he's in the middle of catching a big one.
Yeah.
And an alien comes down. Right.
Yeah.
So I like to take real people, you know, same thing with Fighting Olympus and some of these other movies. I like to take real people, put them in crazy situations, and then think, how would a real person act? A real person may not run into battle. A real person may hide. A real person may say, hey, that has nothing to do with me. I'm, you know. So it allows you, again, those genres allows you the flexibility to do whatever you want. But what grounds it is having that story of, this is a regular person that could be me. I can relate to this person, right? It could be me. But I probably would have did that, right? When I hear a noise, I'm probably not going to investigate. I'm not going to go down, you know, out the window, you know, lock the door and wait. So how do you take what you would really do and still make it into an interesting story, right?
Fantastic.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
But when you do it right, I think the viewers really resonate with it.
Absolutely. Now, independent filmmaking can be kind of an epic quest on its own.
Yes.
I'm curious, do you ever feel like you're Frodo with the One Ring?
Yes. I feel that quite often, right? I feel that quite often, and all the rest of the team is like, you know, arguing and fussing, and I'm like, oh, I got.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest challenges you faced as an indie filmmaker? I think, you know, that would be something that I'd love to know more about.
Sure. Well, I would say one challenge that a lot of people don't think about is indie filmmakers, for the most part, just want to make films. They just want to create. But the creating is only a small part of finding continuous success in this, right? So most, and I've talked to enough indie filmmakers to feel like this is the case. Most of us, you just want to do what you have to do. You don't want to, you know, have all the fanfare and all of this and all of that. You just want to create.
Right.
And then have somebody else take it and do something with it, and you create again and do something. But that the business part is the tricky aspect.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of indie filmmaking that's tricky is people expect it to happen quicker for you than it does. So, for example, you hear me, you know, we have a new movie that's going to be that we wrapped up in. Post is all done and it'll be coming out near to the end of the year, right? Late to middle year, end of the year. So when people hear that you're filming and they see the post and they see all of this cool stuff, and then they're like, when is it out? I'm like, there's a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
Like what, right? Didn't you say that's a wrap?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's just a first part, right?
Yeah.
There's post, there's marketing, there's looking at distribution, there's all this other stuff that you have to take care of. And, you know, people are like, hey, you know, didn't you finish that last year? What's going on? And I try to let them know, like, there's some movies that you're seeing from Hollywood 5 years later. Right. They finished it. Right. You talk about Lord of the Rings again. How long did they stay there and do all three? Right.
Right. Yeah. Years.
Yeah.
They did.
But when you saw it, you're probably thinking wow, they did another one's coming. This is awesome. No. Yeah. Like by the time they got to the second three, like, you know, you know, the guys didn't even look the same, like, right? They're husky and muscular and, you know.
On the other side of that, on the flip side of that, though, as an independent filmmaker, do you have more freedoms than if you were beholden to a big studio?
You do. You do. Because you can do it on your terms, and you can do it at your pace, and you can use your creativity. So rather than if I want to design a poster and this is how I envision the poster, that's what I want to be able to do. I don't want you to take the people that look like real people and turn them into, you know, something that doesn't look like it. Or, you know, you take my sci-fi drama and now it looks like a horror because somebody's holding a butcher knife. And I'm like, what is that? Nobody even has a knife in this movie. Right. So, but, you know, they may feel like, okay, that's what will sell it more. But selling it more and staying true to your vision is a balance that you have to have. You know, sometimes they coincide, but sometimes you have to say, this is what I envisioned. This is how I see the movie playing out. And you do have flexibility and you can determine what your pathway is, what your timeline is, and the story you want to tell. Because I always think of it like this. People create, and everybody may not receive it. Everybody may not receive it the way you wanted it to be received. But it doesn't mean that it's a failure, right? I think of The Room, right? That's one that's really, you know, a big deal, right? There's supposed to be this serious drama, you know, and I don't know how, but that's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then it became a cult classic, funny, hilarious movie that they did another movie about that's fantastic. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But and now the guys, you know, like, oh, yeah, that's what I intended. No, yeah. you didn't.
No, you didn't.
No, you thought it was going to be this touching drama. Yeah. But the people watching it said, it's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Right.
Yeah.
Now, when you have that flexibility, you know, because I would still consider that independent, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He financed it himself. So he can change the narrative to match what the people are saying.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
The studio's going to say, no, it's a drama.
Right.
It's going to be a drama. Yeah. And they're going to send a whole bunch of stuff out to counter what people are saying that this is, you know, funny
that's
and silly.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So as an indie filmmaker, you're able to kind of follow the audience's interpretation a little better. I think that's great.
You
know, one of the story about that that's I think is fascinating, you know, Clerks is one of those indie film maker movies. And they shot it in black and white because there was all the fluorescent lighting. And so they couldn't afford the expensive lighting to replace so that they could shoot it in color. And so that's why they shot it in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But a critic came out and said, I like the way they shot it in black and white to look like security cam footage from a convenience store.
Yeah.
And so Kevin Smith, the writer director, he was like, that's a stretch, but I'll go with it. So when they were interviewing him, like, why did you shoot it in black and white? He's like, well, I wanted to look like a security footage from a convenience store. Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah.
Sure. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. I did want to ask you, you mentioned the word balance, and what it made me think of was you balance your career life with a family life pretty well.
Yes.
And I think I'd like to know a little bit more about that and why that's important to you.
Yeah, I think it's important because I know a lot of filmmakers that is a big struggle, right? It's a big struggle. But I have a fantastic wife that's been on my side from, you know, the beginning of me saying, you know what, I want to do this.
That's great.
And
that's great.
And, you know, you know, she's helped with everything. So, you know, we go to the stores together to get wardrobe. You know, we're scouting locations together.
That's
you know,
great.
when I'm making my final decisions on cast, she's the one that's like, you know, let me, you know, hey, what do you think? I don't know about that one, right? And she's coming from it from a viewer point of view, so she can give me that element.
Yeah.
I think the challenge now, though, is now she's so deep into it. Now she thinks like a filmmaker. She's like, yeah, those shadows are, you know.
You're like, hey, I wanted a non-insider perspective. You can't be.
Right. Yeah. Right. She's not, now she's really good. She's like, you know, I don't know what type of lens they use. Yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about? Just watch the movie. But it's fun because we get to make the journey together. For example, Black Box, I really wanted to see, like, could we just do it? So I'm doing camera, directing, producing. She's doing sound. And we, you know, we had a PA. And that's that was great. It. And we're, you know, we're about to go, you know, we just got accepted in another festival in Flagstaff. So we'll be doing that in August for Black Box. But and it's been doing very, very well consistently. So the cool thing about it is when you find a way to incorporate people you care about into the thing you care about, then they don't feel like a burden when you do that. Because filmmaking, until you get to the actual on-set stuff, it's a quiet, lonely place, right? When you're writing scripts, when you're doing budgets, when you're doing all of this stuff to get to the point where you can shoot that nobody cares about. Nobody cares about the pre-production. Nobody cares about, you know, that you're having to say, okay, can I combine these five different characters into one because the budget doesn't allow us just to have, you know, a whole room full of people that don't matter. Okay, let's take all of those personalities and make it into one person and have a strong person play that. So having someone and people on your side, my parents are incredible. They support, you know, their creators, you know. So having a strong foundation of people that understand, they may not understand what you're going through, but they understand how passionate you are about it. And so they respect that and give you room to do it.
That's great. Yeah. And you got to, I know I find I need to keep my priorities in order. And that thing that I think is the most important thing may not be the most important thing in my life, you know, but at the time I'm locked in obsession on something that's work related, but I have this personal life that is actually much more important. I value more. So it's an important reminder. Thank you for sharing that.
It is.
I want to talk a little bit about those classic influences. You mentioned the Sinbad movies. There is, of course, you mentioned Lord of the Rings. There's Legend and Krull. We were talking earlier about those 80s fantasy films.
Oh, yeah.
You know, first question on Lord of the Rings is you read the books, and then when you saw the movies, do you feel like, are you a books are better guy, or are you a movies are better guy, or what's your interpretation on that?
I think they're just different.
Yeah.
I think they're just different. I don't think it's better, because if it wasn't for the books, I would have never had that feeling that I felt in the theater. And I don't have that all that often where I'm like, I know these people, right?
Yeah.
I don't know those people. They have, nobody knows, you know.
Yeah.
But I felt like when I first sat down, okay, I can see that. Now,
do you feel like the movies captured those people that you felt like you knew from the books? Do you feel like their spirit, their soul of that character was cinematically interpreted accurately?
I think in a lot of cases, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. That Bilbo and, you know, even the when you got to the Frodo one,
right?
I'd say they did. Now some of the other characters, I didn't quite picture them as dynamic as they came across on camera, right?
Okay.
Like is it John Reyes? I can't think of his name. He was in Raiders of the Lost Ark, but the one that played the dwarf. I wouldn't have imagined the dynamic nature of that and the relationship between him and Legolas.
Yeah.
I, I wouldn't have thought that you could make that much fun.
Right.
You know, because the book was riveting. I wouldn't say it was fun. It was just so interesting and well written and so imaginative. But now I'm seeing stuff for the first time. And the actor that played Aragorn, you know, that was a whole nother level, because I really couldn't see anybody else doing that.
Yeah.
But some of those characters, you know, some were minor characters in the books, and there's other books that they came from, and they kind of blended things together.
Yeah.
But I think both did a fantastic job. Now I'm talking about the first three.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just talking about the first.
Yeah, the first three. I agree completely. I think there are certain things that I feel the movies did better than the books, like Samwise Gamgee's monologue at the end of The Two Towers, where he talks about the stories. It's such an inspirational movie, or a moment in a movie, and just beautiful. And I compared it to what was written in the book, and I was like, I don't know, I like this speech in the movie better than what was in the book. So absolutely, it's interesting. When you're, you know, when I'm curious if you've ever slipped into homages to those classics in your work, the movies, do you ever just find that coming up?
I mean, you know, with Fighting Olympus again, the thinking about those ancient tales and thinking about, you know, with Clash of the Titans, the original one, and you know, how they portrayed Medusa, and I'm like, you know what, let's not portray her that way. Everybody portrays her that way,
right?
Let's tell what created that, but from a view of now. Like, what created this person from this beautiful, you know, woman that, you know, that was, had so much going for her. And then what the torment that she faced that turned her into this, and how can we use that element? Right. Because I remember seeing it and I'm like, man, every time they show her, you know, it's the same thing. There's gotta be something behind that. Right. Yeah. When you think of Ares, right? You know, they show him one way. What if he's a little off, right? What if he's a little wacky? So I'm paying homage in a way, because I respect where that cinematically those things started. I don't know if there was anything, I can't recall anything before that original Lord of the Rings, not Lord of the Rings, Clash of the Titans, that really made me think of Greek mythology like that. I'm sure there's probably some way back, you know, but that was the first one where I'm like, wow, you know. Or there's a line in the movie where the hero of the story, you know, he's having a conversation, and they're trying to tell him what to expect on his adventure. And he's like, you know, what's next? Flying horses. Right. Yeah. So that's a homage to Pegasus. Right.
Right.
Because he's trying to say like, oh, you're telling me I'm going to face all this stuff. Like, really? Like, oh, I'm flying horses. No, not flying horses. Right. What does the riverman, right? The ferryman, I mean.
Yes.
What does a ferryman look like? So the ferryman's in Fighting Olympus, right? So you have a lot of these subtle connections that, you know, you may not know the history, but you can connect the dots and say, oh, that's a unique way. That's a unique way of seeing these characters. I like that.
Yeah, there's always that bridge of the familiar to the different, right? The familiar to something new. You want it to be familiar in a certain way, but you don't want it to be a duplicate. It has to have something new. And because if it's too off the rails different,
yeah.
people won't be able to relate or connect to with what they know. And so it's always a balance of those two, I feel like.
It is. And it's fun to create that balance. For example, when you think of you think of Cerberus, right? How do I portray a three-headed dog as a person?
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? Okay. Well, he's going to have three different personalities, right? That he's
nice.
Combating all yeah. at the same time. So yeah. when you have that, now like you that. Can play with it. Now actors, yeah. you know, actors can feel at liberty to just do their thing, right? You know what? I get to play three characters at the same time in the right. same scene.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have fun
yeah.
with it.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Yeah. All right. So before we go, I'd love to do a lightning round. OK, so I'm going to ask some questions, quick answers type of
Got
thing.
It.
All right.
Got
so
it.
It'll be, I think, pretty fun. So, all right. First question. If you could have one prop or artifact from any classic sci-fi fantasy film, right? One prop or artifact from any classic sci-fi or fantasy film to use in one of your movies, what would you choose?
The crow weapon.
Yeah, I love it. Yes, absolutely. Very impractical, though. You know,
I will find a way.
Yeah, I'll find a way. Yeah.
I'll find a way somehow.
All right. Which fictional world would you love to film in? Middle Earth, the world of legend, Planet Krull? Which is there a certain world? Man, I wish I could film a movie in that world.
That's a good one. I would say probably legend.
Okay.
Legend and probably the dark scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was such,
yeah.
Yeah. That was such a different world and, you know, it was scary, spooky, but, you know, yeah. it just had presence.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. All right. So you've done every job on set, but if you yeah. could hire a mythical creature for one of those jobs, what would it be? And like what creature and what job, what creature would you put in that job?
Oh, man. Let's say the Kraken.
Okay. What's the Kraken doing on set? That's
what
Kraken's I want to know.
Kraken's going to be my the first AD.
So anything, that's perfect. That'll get people work on time and running things together.
Oh, it's going to be like clockwork. So don't make me release the Kraken because you are going to.
Yeah, they're not stretching out that union cigarette break. They're letting things.
Everything is going to be straight and narrow.
That's great. All right. Who would win in a fight? Your modern mythic hero, Rucker, from Fighting mm-hmm. Olympus, or Aragorn from Lord of the Rings?
Well, I'm going to go with mine, and I'll give you why.
Okay. All right.
Because Rucker is going to come up with an idea to somehow use one of the other characters against you and have you fight them. And then he'll just wait until you're in trouble and then he'll win.
So he's
a deal maker. So he likes to make different deals. So he'll get Gimli against Aragorn and then Aragorn. Okay.
Right.
So he'll work that out and maybe find a way to get Smaug in there. And okay, hey, Smaug, you know what? I'm going to get your duel back. You take out Aragorn.
Yeah.
So he's going to use his deal making strategies to overcome the brute strength and charisma of Aragorn.
Okay. All right. Great. All right. All right. Last question. What's the one sentence, and this is not really a funny one, but what's the one sentence of advice you could give an aspiring indie filmmaker who wants to make sci-fi or fantasy movies? So is there some advice you were given or something that you've come up with that like, this is something that's really important to know going forward?
Yeah, I would say Never let your current circumstances limit your creativity.
That's great. Yep. That's good advice. Well, thank you so much for doing the show. I really appreciate it, Julian. This has been a lot of fun for me, and I wish you so much success. For our listeners and viewers, if you haven't checked out Fight in Olympus, please do. It is available on various streaming platforms. Mm-hmm. Before we go, Julian, is there anything you'd like to direct people to check out?
Yeah. So again, Fighting Olympus, you can see it, Amazon, Tubi, Google Play, you name it, it's there. Just be prepared because a new psychological thriller is going to be coming out soon, The Fear of It. So keep your ears posted because okay. That's going to be the next project. Like I said, I'm all over the place with genres, so I'm just having fun and living the life.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you, Julian Hampton. And for our viewers, as I always say at the end of every episode, for the love of God, please stay nerdy. Thank you.